Thank you, Danielle. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation Policy this fine, drippy morning, April 12, 2017. We have, committee members, a very full agenda today. If we are successful in moving through, we do not have to hold committee on Friday. So if that's not enough inertia for you to keep your testimony short, we will get out of here and not have to come back on Friday. I would first like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3230. I believe we have a couple of representatives in the room who would like to testify to this. My apologies. I'm going to open a public hearing and possible work session. Thank you, Tim. Tim, could you tell us a little bit about this bill, please?
Chairman McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 3230 appropriates $12 million from the general fund to the Department of Transportation for Safe Routes to School, directs the Department of Transportation to expend $20 million other funds from the State Highway Fund for Safe Routes to School infrastructure projects, requires the Department to submit biannual report to the Legislative Assembly on progress and funding of Safe Routes to School programs, declares an emergency effective on passage. There is a no revenue impact that has been issued, and a fiscal impact has been issued, and there is a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and there are no amendments in front of us.
Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is John Lively. I'm State Representative from House District 12, which is essentially the city of Springfield. I'm pleased to be here with my co-promoter of this bill, Senator Taylor. So I can tell you I get to work on a lot of wonderful things here, but this is one that anybody that knows me, it's probably one of the most exciting things that I've had the privilege to work with groups on and to promote. So first, I want to make it clear, this isn't a new program. This is a program that's existed for a long time, but with very little funding or very little ability to move the program forward. So four important aspects of Safe Route to Schools. One, it's more than crosswalks and sidewalks. There's a very large educational component involved with it in order to train students and help people learn how to ride bikes or to transport safely. I had the opportunity last summer to go to Thurston Middle School and participate with a group of students, and after they got through as part of their classes, we went out and rode. The school had bikes, they all had helmets, and we rode. And as a lifelong bike rider, I can tell you I learned some important safety things that I probably took for granted over the years in riding the bikes when I rode with those students, and so it was pretty impressive for me. It does also include safety projects, and one of the things I want to emphasize is the reason why it's within a mile of the schools versus just a quarter of a mile or half mile. Because the transportation funding that goes to school districts is they don't fund transportation for students that live within the mile of the schools. And so in most cases, in many of our grade schools, they're neighborhood schools, so the students all live within a mile of the schools. That does not necessarily mean that 1 mile is safe. And so when we're talking about safe routes to schools, and I appreciate the conversations in the transportation package about the 1 mile, that's important. An example in my neighborhood, I live a half mile from a grade school, a mile from the middle school, and a block from my house is a major road that the students use to get to Centennial Grade School. It's a county road, and it has no sidewalks, and it's 35 miles an hour. Now, fortunately, in my neighborhood, the school district has an exception and is allowed to bus those students that choose because of Centennial crossing this major street. But not all students. A lot of students would still like to walk or ride their bikes to school. But here's an example, a half mile from the school, of that being done. Also, Safe Routes to Schools is trying to improve access to older students to transit. So in some cases, that's the connections in that to be able to get them where transit is. And it's also the idea around this is prioritization of Title I schools and those schools that have the most need. Again, Centennial Grade School in my neighborhood is 75% free and reduced lunch, and it's one of those Title I schools that those programs are important, and those students in many cases don't. In my community, I'm lucky. We have a strong component between the school district and the city, a partnership, and the Safe Routes people that we have a program that's working. And in fact, next summer, they're going to build some sidewalks on Rainbow Drive, which is just the next one down from me. That's a major corridor for those students that are getting to. So we have a good program. This is an important bill. It's important to keep it in the conversations and talk about how we get there as we talk about the transportation package and what it is. So I just encourage your support of this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Senator, welcome.
Thank
nice
you.
To have you back on our side.
Yes, well, thank you for having me. Chair McEwen, members of the committee, I'm Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21. I want to also thank my co-chief sponsor, Representative Lively, for working with me on this bill. I have always been a supporter of Safe Routes to School, and I, too, have been fortunate to join schools in my district when bicycle and pedestrian safety programs are taught. And I agree with everything Representative Lively said. It's very important that the students in our school districts understand and are taught how to get to school safely. This bill will add specific funding for ODOT to invest in the Safe Routes to School Fund for grant awards and for infrastructure projects, and has a focus on Title I schools. We know Safe Routes to School programs are effective and beneficial to students. These measures help to increase physical activity when in turn means improved school districts. We know if more children and families are off the road, there is less congestion. We also know it is often our underserved communities, who lack safe streets and sidewalks and are thus less likely to be physically active. We also know these common sense measures will improve safety by preventing injuries and even deaths. I wholeheartedly support the work of my colleague and the hard work of the Street Trusts, and urge your support of 3230 House Bill. And I want to thank you, Chair McEwen, and members of the committee. I'm trying to talk fast because I know you want to come.
You're pressure. Doing very like, well, oh, Senator.
We had a PowerPoint, but we decided.
64 slides, I hear. Yes.
Just pass the bill and we're good to go.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator, so much, and Representative Lively. Other questions for this panel?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. I would like to call up at this time Shane McRhodes, Ken Curley, and Leanne Ferguson, please. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Good morning, Chair McEwen and committee members. My name is Shane McRhodes. My address is 250 East 36th Avenue in Eugene. I'm here as a member of the For Every Kid Coalition and advocate for healthier transportation options, and as a dad of two 6-year-old boys and an 8-year-old daughter. I'm here to support House Bill 3230 and encourage you to send the bill on to the Ways and Means Committee. In 1970, Eugene formed the first bicycle committee made of city staff and community members focused on guiding the city towards creating safer bikeways. In 71, Oregon passed one of the nation's first bike bills, dedicating 1% of highway funding to ODOT to be dedicated in what we now call active transportation projects. And in 1972, I was born in Eugene. I am lucky in that the city grew, and as orchards surround my grandparents' home filled with more houses and roadways, the city also added sidewalks, bike lanes, and a great river path system that helped create one of the best places in the U.S. to move around by bicycle. However, after decades of outpaced spending for automobile mobility, we, like most other communities around the state and the country, saw walking and biking as a more challenging options for many. When my wife and I were married, we wanted to take a journey around the country to see if Oregon was the right place for us to settle, so we took a year-long bike tour, circumnavigating 11,500 miles around our amazing country, before finally settling back in Eugene. We settled there because of the great choices we had in schools, in healthy, sustainable foods, in rich cultural experiences, and in the potential for transportation options. Our daughter was born in 2009, just a year after our local Safe Routes to School program was created, and since then, we've seen our community working hard to make those transportation options better for kids and families again. We know so many parents who want to walk, bike, bus more, but find it difficult because of how certain parts of our city are built. We make it easy for them to choose to drive, but we make it much harder to choose the healthier, sustainable, and dare I say, more fun way to move around our city. We helped by starting a family-friendly bike ride called Kidical Mass, and now we have hundreds of families join us throughout the year to ride through the city, enjoying the power of more family bikes on the road. Kids and parents feel empowered and encouraged, and they want to ride more, but they often tell us that in their neighborhood or their school, they have too many barriers to get where they need to go, so they don't feel safe biking on their own. These families deserve safer and healthier transportation options, and the Safe Routes to School program can help cities and communities throughout Oregon get there. When there was dedicated Safe Routes to School funds, we were seeing great projects and programs happening, and now without it, we're seeing fewer of these projects. The dedicated funding in this bill would help create real positive change for not only my children, but thousands of families throughout Oregon, and I encourage you to send House Bill 3230 to the Ways and Means Committee with a major show of support.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning. Chair McKeown, I saw you yesterday at Transit Day, so I spent some time in the Capitol and appreciate all the work that you are doing for the state. It's amazing.
Thank you.
My name is Kim Curley, and I live at 1310 Northeast Hollinshead Drive in Bend. As a member of the Every Kid for Every Kid Coalition, I'm here to also ask you to support House Bill 3230. I'm here representing families from the other side of the mountains. I work in 14 rural and frontier counties in our state, and we have different challenges than people in Eugene, Salem, or Portland. And I have worked on safe routes to school in my job at Commute Options since 2005. And in the small cities and towns on the east side of the mountains, we have, again, long distances between the places that people are and where they want to go. I have an 11-year-old son named Jack, and he walks to school every single day. He has since he was 3 years old. We used to walk together, and now he walks on his own, and I think it's really important for kids in our society to be able to be on their own in a safe way. And this funding would help create those spaces for people to be able to enjoy their communities in a acceptable way. He feels independence and confidence now, and I think that's just really awesome. So increasing safety on our streets, we preserve the livability of our communities. You know, we can pave roads and build highways, but that doesn't really make a place. It's not a community. And so bike safety education, walking school buses, walking and biking events at schools can even happen in very rural parts of the state. For instance, we have a partnership in Bend with the Boys and Girls Club, the OSU Extension Service, Housing Works, and our local federally qualified health center, Mosaic Medical. And we're creating walking school buses to a Title I school right now. So these folks are volunteering, creating relationships and training volunteers to get kids walking. And we all know that we need to walk more, right? Where's my Fitbit? It's a bilingual school as well, so it's a Spanish and English school. So there's over 100 members of the For Every Kid Coalition. They all support House Bill 3230. Right now, only $500,000 is going to this program from ODOT, and that is only helping 20% of our schools we're spreading the peanut butter very, very thin. So we're asking you to dedicate $10 million for projects within a one-mile radius of schools and $6 million for education and encouragement events. And those things need to go together. If you build it, they will not come unless they know about it. So thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Chair McKeown and committee. I will keep this very short. I will skip the story section and I'll go straight to some numbers. I have lots of stories if anybody wants to hear anymore. I'd be glad to provide them later after this hearing, so you guys cannot do this on Friday. Safe routes to school infrastructure projects alone can increase walking and biking to school by 20 to 25%, but when you combine that with education programs and encouragement programs, my name. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Leanne Ferguson. I work with the Street Trust, and I'm here representing the 125 organizations and thousands of individuals that make up the For Every Kid Coalition. And I urge you guys to support House Bill 3230 and send it to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation to pass. Thank you very much. Now I will skip the part. So we know that when education and encouragement is combined with the infrastructure improvements, we see about 40 to 45% of kids walking and biking. So that's why those two pieces really need to happen together to have the most impact on our kids. House Bill 3230 identifies general funds as the source for the non-infrastructure programs like education and encouragement programs, but the For Every Kid Coalition supports House Bill 3230 and supports funding non-infrastructure programs from federal funds like the Transportation Alternatives Program. In the past, Safe Routes to School in Oregon was funded at the level of about $12 million for infrastructure over a period of about 6 years, and then $4.7 million for programs over a period of 2008 to 2015. But currently, only $500,000 is dedicated to Safe Routes to School programs, and no money is dedicated to the infrastructure projects. So these past and current investments only reach about 20% of schools, like Kim said. So that's 80% of schools and 80% of kids that were not actually able to help walk and bike to school safely. We would like to dedicate the $16 million annually to those two pieces and prioritize Title I schools through this process. Our intent is also to include Safe Routes to School as part of a balanced transportation package. So the For Every Kid Coalition and I really urge you to support House Bill 3230, send it to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation to pass. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Questions, committee? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just want to comment, please, your excuse, thank you. Just want to comment that, as you all well know, we are working on a transportation package as we speak. One of the pieces of the recommendation that came out of the transit, bike ped, safe routes to schools, and highway safety work group that Senator Beyer has been chairing includes safe routes to schools and an investment over a 10-year period. I think this is an important bill to send down to Ways and Means as a backup in case, God forbid, we are not successful with our transportation package, just to have it instead in case we need it at a later date. But a lot of work has gone into this. I think there's a place for this in Ways and Means at this point to just go down and sit and assume that we'll move the transportation package forward with Senator Beyer's recommendation for this investment. I also want to note that I think Representative Lively brought up that there's a little bit of differential between what Senator Beyer has recommended and what this bill does, and so we will let the proponents of this bill work with Senator Beyer on changes that may be requested as the transportation package moves forward. So I just wanted to make sure we get that on the record. Any other questions? All right, we are open for a work session. So I will turn to Vice Chair Vile.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 3230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Vile moves House Bill 3230 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be a no on this bill, and this is a hard one because, Representative Lively said, the thing that he enjoys about his job is the wonderful things that can be presented, but those wonderful things all have to be paid for. And with the situation I think that the state is in right now with a spending issue, I struggle with voting for more good things, you know, that we have to discern what is better than the other. And so I am just going to be a no just because of the spending issue. So, I think these are all good and admirable and maybe even needed things, but it's just a tough time.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm also extremely concerned about the cost and
what's next?
And where we go after this biennium with this. I'll probably support it, but again, I just remain extremely concerned about where we go after this biennium, because so much of what we do is good, and it lasts for a couple of years, and then it requires upkeep, roll up, everything else, and we just wind up exactly where we are today as a state, and that's where we're basically bust. So, this is a tough one. I think, I'll probably support it. It's hard not to, but I'm just really concerned about where ultimately it leads us.
Thank you, Representative. Representative McLean.
I guess this is the morning for caveats before our vote, but my two caveats for this morning are, number one, I really want us to remember what the chair said, and that is that even though we pass something down to the Ways and Means, that there's an active, basically investment project going on right now, and so it's important that even though we may vote for it, that we're saying we're voting for the intent, which is safe pathways to school, and especially Title I and some of those other issues, but that we have to all be flexible in trying to put together that investment type of project. But I also feel strongly that you have to do a risk analysis no matter when you're voting. And I'm looking at what it will cost us if we don't do things like this, if we don't have pathways, if we don't have good, safe bike pathways and bikeways and places for people to walk and to get to school and get down to the center of town and all those different things. Because if we don't do that, there's a lot of other expenses that the state will be paying for. And even if it's just buses to help the schools get kids safely to school. But I think it's important for us all to realize that we all do cost-risk analysis as we are voting every time. And so I will vote for this today with the understanding that we have to be flexible with ways and means and with ourselves as we're going forward in this investment package.
Great. Thank you. Any other comments? Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Barreto?
No.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vile.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. Motion passes. And we will send this on down to Ways and Means. So I will close our public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3230. Thank you for your patience, Representative Noes.
Great.
We will open a hearing on House Bill, let's see, we are on 2682. Public hearing and possible work session.
Okay. I'll
welcome,
try to go
Representative.
As well. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, thanks for hearing House Bill 2682. And for allowing me to testify before you this morning, for the record, I'm Rob Noes, State Representative for House District 42. I began working on this bill after hearing from several different constituents and constituent groups in my district, all of whom are deeply concerned about the safety of Portland streets. In a weird way, I think this bill would actually help the bill that we were just hearing about, Safe Route to Schools. Unfortunately, in the last 2 years, Portland has erased more than a decade of progress in traffic safety, with 2016 being the most dangerous year for traffic accidents since 2003. It was clear something needed to be done, and that's why I began working on this legislation. As amended, should you adopt the Dash 2, House Bill 2682 would allow the City of Portland to reduce speed limits in residential streets from 25 to 20 miles per hour. That covers about 61% of the roads in my city, or about 4,827 miles. Under current statute, the City of Portland can appeal a posted speed limit and ask that it be lowered. However, that process requires extensive research by both ODOT and the city, and the process can take over a year to complete. I learned, I'm not normally in the transportation space, that even getting a residential street's speed limit changed, you have to go to ODOT and get blessing for that, and that's what this bill is attempting to try to change. With House Bill 2682, both ODOT and the Portland Bureau of Transportation will save time and administrative costs, simply allowing all residential streets to be lowered by the speed an additional 5 miles per hour. Now, initially, the bill before you had a much broader scope, but after reaching out to the cities and counties, actually, I think they reached out to me, I learned that most of the local governments don't want this responsibility. Mine does, but most do not. This bill would only apply to Portland, and they have the means and the desire to implement this kind of program. The Dash 2 amendment to the bill was drafted in collaboration with both ODOT and my city. I'll just say that I think this bill will do a lot of good for my district. House District 42, I think, is physically the smallest district in the state because we are very densely packed. It's one of the most residential. And we know that fatal injuries quadruple in accidents that occur at 30 miles per hour or above, as opposed to 20 miles per hour. Lowering the speed limit to 20 miles per hour will dramatically improve the outcomes in collisions, hopefully help to save lives. As I mentioned, all the parties who would be charged with implementing this bill collaborated in drafting the amendment, and I hope you'll support the Dash 2, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Representative. You have questions? Yes, Representative Noble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to commend you on this. Working in a couple of rural cities, and I'm disappointed that it's only just Portland, in law enforcement, where we saw a local need to make a change. A lot of times, just because of the way the system works, you could request a speed change, ended up with a higher speed because of the way the formula works. They actually come in with this is the average speed that people are traveling, as opposed to this is what needs to happen. I don't know if that's making sense, but
no, it makes sense.
So the idea of local control, I think, is a good one.
Well, I'm sorry, there's not more that want to do it, but this is like the narrow craft or pass that we have for this. So maybe it works out really well, and we can come back and try it for some other areas.
Yes, Representative McLean.
I don't have dash two, so the dash two is just taking it down to Portland. Oh, there it is, right there. Okay, thank you.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
That's the intent,
and
anyway.
I believe I'll have ODOT come
sure.
up if you don't
yeah.
mind. And if you're welcome to stay, Representative. And I'll invite ODOT
I'll,
up to
I'll
explain
be,
what
I'll
the
be
Dash
a little
2
late
does.
For my next meeting.
Okay.
I'd kind of like to hear this.
All right.
Thank you.
Welcome, sir. We also have Elizabeth Edwards, City of Portland. Go ahead and come on up, Elizabeth, and we'll find out what the Dash 2 does. And Tim, I in my haste, I neglected to have you preview this bill, so that might be helpful as well.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, 2682, authorizes cities and counties by process established by rule to establish designated speed for certain highways without seeking approval of the Department of Transportation. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. You have in front of you the Dash 2 amendment that replaces the measure and limits the ability to establish designated speed for certain highways without the approval of the Department of Transportation to the City of Portland.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator. Yes, we've worked closely with the City of Portland, as well as other cities and counties on the Dash 2s, and it does just limit it to the City of Portland.
All right, thank you. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee, City of Portland, Elizabeth Edwards, and just wanted to thank you all for this opportunity and Representative Nose for spearheading this bill that actually makes a big difference on a lot of streets, and thanks to ODOT for working with us on narrowing the concept. I would make just one small correction. So the City of Portland has over 4,800 lane miles. That's enough to get us from here to London. And this residential streets are about a little over 60%, so that's just shy of 3,000 lane miles within our city. Okay. And that 5 mile per hour difference is a life or death difference in many instances.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Yes, Representative McLean.
And I noticed that in the Dash 2, it also says that you're taking on the responsibility of putting up the signs, and that the signage will make it when the actual change of 20 to 25 will happen. Is that correct?
And Chair McEwen, Representative McLean, working with Legislative Council to make sure that we're clear about the signage requirements, our understanding is that we can take those signs that currently say 25 miles per hour and switch them out for 20 in order to comply. It's the same description that exists in other parts of the statute for signage requirements.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
You.
Appreciate your testimony today. I will turn to Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McEwen, I move to adopt a Dash 2 amendment dated 4-3-17.
Vice Chair Meek moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated 4-3-17. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2682 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2682 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Clerk. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. My apologies. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to vote to support this today, although it has nothing to do with my district. It doesn't make traveling or anything associated with lifestyle in my district any better than it currently is today. I don't want to get into what could easily be a tit-for-tat battle with the urban areas and the rural areas like mine, saying that if you don't do good things for me, I'm not going to do good things for you. And I want to, by my vote today, break that cycle and say that I'm willing to do something for the City of Portland if the City of Portland will be willing to really consider some of the things that rural Oregon needs. And as an example, we're going to have Senate Bill 3 before us soon, which really impacts life in my district. And we're up against it on that vote here in the House. But that's only one issue that we face in rural Oregon. So again, I'm going to vote for this because I believe in what the representative is saying today, that his people would appreciate that and like that. And I would just, from the bottom of my heart, ask that our urban friends remember just this, but other things as well, that we're willing to help our urban friends, but we just ask that our urban friends be willing to help us in some things that really make a difference in our lives, something that I don't see happen much here.
Representative Wilson, I appreciate your drawing attention to the differences that occur all across this state. We each represent a different district, and we each represent 65,000 people who have great variety in geography and in lifestyle, and I think your words are well taken. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mee.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vile.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. The motion passes. Do we have a carrier for this bill, Representative? Would you be very excited about carrying this bill today? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Closing the public hearing and possible work session on 2682. Let's go back. Let's see. Do we have Representative Bynum here? She's not going to be here till a little bit later. Is that correct? Okay, great. Then I will open. Let's see. Representative Witt is not here, and his bill is 3389.
Just go to work sessions.
I think we'll just go to work sessions, ladies and gentlemen, and hopefully we can get through these quickly. House bill, opening a work session on House Bill 2750. Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2750 permits the Port of Hood River to establish a toll on bridges. The Port of Hood River has authority to operate and maintain, outlines under what circumstances the Port of Hood River is subject to state contracting processes and prevailing wage rates, land use laws, and the ability to pursue public-private partnerships. There's a minimal revenue and a fiscal impact has been issued. You have in front of you the -1 amendment that clarifies that political subdivisions are subject to provisions of law concerning the acquisition of property and the use of revenues to connect bridges to roads, approaches, and transportation facilities within or outside its boundaries, and clarifies the final agreement for a tollway project is subject to disclosure.
And do we have anyone here?
I don't think so.
Who is interested in this?
No, unless ODOT wants to come.
Vice Chair Vile. I'll turn to Vice Chair Vile.
Chair McEwen, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated 3/7/17 to House Bill 2750.
Vice Chair Vile moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated March 7th, 2017. Any discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2750 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Vile moves House Bill 2750 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to put on the record House Bill 3231, which I had heard before this committee, may it rest in peace, had a little bit bigger scope, but a very similar intent to what this bill does. I'm strongly in support of it. I think it's very important for us to recognize that unless we begin to allow local jurisdictions to take upon themselves the effort and give them the tools to do these kinds of important transportation projects, we may find ourselves not doing a lot of the work that really needs to be done in this state. And so I'm tickled to see this one moving along.
Thank you, Vice Chair Mile. Any other discussion points? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Vice Chair Mee.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vile?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion passes, and I'm comfortable assigning this to Representative Johnson, if you are all comfortable with that notion. All right, we will assign him as a carrier. Thank you all. Closing the work session on House Bill 2750, opening a work session on House Bill 2290. Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2290 adjusts certain fees imposed by the Department of Transportation Division of Driver and Motor Vehicles. There is a revenue light and a fiscal light that have been issued for the purposes of moving the bill to Joint Committee on Ways and Means. There is a dash one amendment that lowers the cost of various products and directs the Department of Transportation to conduct a cost study once every 2 years. And report to the Legislative Assembly by January 31st of every odd-numbered year. Allows the department to use any study design it determines will best accomplish the purposes of the study. And the dash two amendment lowers the cost of various products and directs the Department of Transportation to conduct a cost study once every 2 years and report to the Legislative Assembly January 31st of every odd numbered year.
Thank you. I think what I would like to do is invite someone from ODOT up just to explain the difference between the base bill and what the dash two is doing. Ms. Joyce, thank you for being here to clarify this for us.
Chair McEwen and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. The dash two significantly reduces the number of fees that are being changed. There are a total of perhaps 15 or 20 fees now being changed, whereas in the base bill there were significantly more than that. A number of them are simply to sort of sync up like fees to one another, like products should have like fees. So there's a set of changes in that regard. And then some of the changes are based on a cost study that DMV has done over the years, identifying those products that the fee does not come even close probably to covering the cost. So reduce the number of fees being changed, and in some of them reducing the span of change between the today's fee and the existing fee. I have a list if you'd like me to run through those. And then also the other item in the dash two is the reporting out to the legislature on this ongoing cost study that DMV intends to do every 2 years so that the legislature can stay up to date on how costs are comparing to these statutorily designated fees.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative McLean.
I just wanted to add that what, as far as the cost study, what I thought was really good about Dash 2 was it gave specifically, it laid out specifically what was going to actually be covered in that report. Mm-hmm. And I think that it gave us more information, and it also was built more on what was already done in the last reports that we all liked when they showed it to us. And so I think that was a really good change in and just sort of tightening up what the report was. And also, I like the narrowing down that we don't need to put everything into effect at the same time when there was going to be so many changes in fees on folks as far as being able to recover the actual cost. But this one did the first level, the first layer, and the really the most responsible ones that will probably not be as noticed as much by others other than it's more efficient and streamlined because it's actually helping put together some processes and putting together some costs. So I think you guys all did a great job, and I know Leah worked on this too, and I think it was a great piece of work in Dash 2.
Thank you.
Any questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here this morning. Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McEwen, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated 4/7/17.
Vice Chair Meek moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated April 7th, 2017. Is there any further discussion? Yes, Vice Chair, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I will be voting yes on the amendment, one, because it reduces the proposed fee increases and then also the study, but I will be a no on the bill.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to reflect the similar thinking on that. I am not sure where I will go ultimately once this hits the floor, but my biggest problem is I'm having a difficult time drawing the lines here from the three different levels of fees, the current level, what was suggested in the base bill, and what is suggested in the amendment.
Representative, would you like me to have Ms. Joyce come up and go through that for you? Would that be helpful?
I don't think there's a need to do it today, but before it hits the floor, yeah, that'd be great.
And Ms. Joyce, would you circle back and make sure that Representative Wilson is briefed? Thank you very much. Any further discussion on the amendment? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to add one more thing, and a no vote has no reflection on the people that work for ODOT, and Amy Joyce has been wonderful to work with in this building, helping with the bills that come through, and she is a great asset to ODOT. So.
Thank you. I'm sure that Ms. Joyce appreciates that. All right. Seeing no further discussion, the amendment is adopted.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 2290 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 2290 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any further discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Noble?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative
Barreto?
No.
Representative Evans?
You betcha, yes.
Representative
McClain?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Yeah, sure.
Vice Chair Meek?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Biden?
Aye. Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion carries. Do we have a carrier? Is anyone, Representative McClain?
Yeah.
Would you like to carry this?
I'm one this volatile.
All right. Thank you very much. I will close the work session. Make sure I get my numbers right here.
2290.
And I'm going to, let's see, where are we headed next? Yes, let's go ahead and do that. I would entertain a motion from the committee to allow Representative Witt to go back and vote on the measures that he missed in his absence. Representative Witt, would you like to do that?
Yes, Madam Chair. I was unclear. I didn't hear which item, but
there were a number, and I will have Mr. Walker list them for you.
All right.
If you are interested in.
Thank you very much.
Chair McClain, members of the committee, we have voted on House Bill 3230.
You would think I'd know that, wouldn't you?
Which House Bill 3230 appropriates $12 million from the general fund to the Department of Transportation for safe routes to schools and directs the Department of Transportation to expend $20 million other funds from the State Highway Fund for safe routes to schools. There is a no revenue impact and a fiscal impact has been issued, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
I think, do you need the full briefing or do you
no,
just need the number?
No, that's fine.
Okay, there's others. Should we just do them all at once?
That's fine by me also.
Okay. And House Bill 2682 authorizes cities and counties by process established by rule to establish designated speed for certain highways without seeking approval of the Department of Transportation. It has a -2 amendment that limits this ability to the city of Portland. And then House Bill 2750 permits the Port of Hood River to establish a toll on bridges. The Port of Hood River has authority to operate and maintain. Outlined under what circumstances the Port of Hood River is subject to state contracting processes and prevailing wage rates, land use laws, and the ability to pursue public-private partnerships. The -1 amendment clarifies that political subdivisions are subject to provision of law concerning acquisition of property.
And I think, Mr. Walker, we'll need to motion to suspend rules. Is that correct?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Witt to vote with respect to House Bills 3230, 2682, and 2750.
It's been moved that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Witt to vote on the referenced bills. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the rules are suspended. Danielle, would you mind calling the roll, I guess is the proper term?
Thank you, yeah.
On House Bill 3230, how do you vote, Representative Witt?
Aye.
On House Bill 2682, how do you vote, Representative Witt?
Madam Chair, on that bill, I'm familiar with the Dash 2 amendment. What was the wisdom of that?
This narrows it to the City of Portland. Only cities and counties came forward and were not comfortable having that authority and wanted, we narrowed it just to the City of Portland at
Thank
their
you.
Request.
Thank you. Whip votes aye.
On House Bill 2750, how do you vote, Representative Witt?
Aye.
And on House Bill 3290, how do you vote, Representative Witt?
I think I cast my vote on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we already did that.
Okay. He already did that. So are you clear?
Yes, there's the 2750, 2682, and 3230.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
You're very welcome. And on that note, Representative Witt, I will open a public hearing and possible work session on 3389, which I believe is your bill. Tim, can you touch on this one, please?
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 3389 expands the criteria for traffic offenses related to rail crossing and adds requirement for drivers to stop for approaching on-track equipment. Just as a note, the current statute only refers to train, and the requirement to stop or yield does not contemplate on-track equipment that need to stop or yield to, that vehicles need to stop and yield to on-track equipment.
And I don't believe we have anyone signed up to testify on this bill. Representative Witt?
Madam Chair, it's a very straightforward bill, and I honestly don't think that I have anything additional to add. It merely extends the same prohibitions that would apply to a train to real equipment that may also be on the tracks, and I think for that basis makes very good sense in terms of the public safety, and I would urge a positive action on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. We all, those of us who work in multimodal world, care deeply about safety of our railways, and I think this is a very appropriate bill, and I appreciate you bringing it.
Thank
it's
you.
Like a little cleanup, broadens things a little bit, and hopefully we'll keep some people safe. So thank you. Vice Chair Vile.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 3389 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Vile moves House Bill 3389 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Danielle, call the roll, please.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Adams?
Yes.
Vice Chair Meade?
Aye.
Vice Chair Vile?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion carries. Representative Witt, would you like to carry that?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you. So I will close the work session on 3389, and I am going to open a work session on 3120. Mr. Walker.
Excuse me.
Bless you. Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 3120 directs the Department of Transportation to designate vehicle dealer as agent for the purposes of preparing and or submitting documents related to vehicle titles, registration, liens, and other services related to complying with federal and state law. Allows the Department of Transportation to penalize vehicle dealers who do not comply with the applicable regulations. There is a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact that have been issued. There's a Dash 1 amendment in front of you, and it just makes changes to clarify responsibilities of both parties.
And committee, you'll note there are two Dash 1s. I believe they are the same. They were just posted on different dates. I believe that's what happened there and why there are two. Let's see. Let's ditch this one. That's old. This is current. Yes, Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McEwen.
Happens all the time.
What is going on?
You get a pass. Everybody gets a pass.
That's a bad start.
Chair McEwen, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 3/24/17.
Vice Chair Meek moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 3/24/17. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 3120 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 3120 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Danielle, call the roll, please.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Wick.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vile.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. The motion passes. Would someone like to carry this on behalf of our auto dealers? Do I have a volunteer? Representative Wilson, thank you. Okay, and we will close the work session on House Bill 3120. And open a work session on House Bill 3125. Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 3125, the original measure requires the Department of Transportation to study options for improving highway structures. There is a minimal revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. There are two amendments. The Dash 1 replaces the measure, defines an auto cycle, clarifies that a Class C license is required for operation of an auto cycle, directs the Department of Transportation to report to the Legislative Assembly no later than September 15, 2021, on changes to federal law related to auto cycles. The Dash 2 amendment, the only difference is that it adds an emergency clause effective upon passage.
I believe we had committee members a discussion about the emergency clause when the bill, when the hearing occurred.
Yeah.
And I would look to you all to indicate whether there is a comfort level with the emergency clause on this bill, then we will move the Dash 2s, unless I see objection. Yes.
No objection from me. I'm all for the emergency clause on that. I know they want to bring that to market.
Vice Chair Vile?
Same as Representative Wilson.
All right. Then I am looking for... So this will be Dash 2. Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, I'd just like to additionally add that I began my riding career on a tricycle, and I kind of expect to finish my riding career on a tricycle. So I'm all for this.
Representative Wilson, when you commented during the original hearing, I was having a thought that you may counter that comment at some point in time as we all age. But I was not going to draw attention to the fact. I was being very kind.
I may be like an old bookkeeper. I'm losing my balance.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Relief going. Chair McEwen, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated 4/4/17.
Vice Chair Meek moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendment dated April 4th, 2017. Any further discussion? The amendment is adopted.
Chair McEwen, I move House Bill 3125 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves House Bill 3125 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk, will you call the roll? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Noble.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that we could probably find some training wheels. You wouldn't have to make a full switch.
Thank you, Representative.
Duly noted, sir. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Vile?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion passes. Do we have a carrier for this bill?
I'm happy to carry, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Vile, thank you. So, closing the work session on House Bill 3125. We are down to, we did that. Mr. Walker, according to my check marks here, we're down to House Bill 3416. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that is
3416.
A bill that is at the request of Representative Bynum.
Well, that's the, just a better note. I've requested that these two days they'll get their office called.
Okay. I think she was just went in the hall. Okay. Committee members, we'll stand at ease until Representative Bynum gets here.
Are there two others that are not, we're not doing
I saw
today?
Two others, but
the lottery bonds and the...
You're correct. The rough tub is not. We're not going to move.
And the connect, Oregon?
The connect.
We're not doing those two.
Yeah.
Stand at ease for a second. Thank you. We're back in session. We are now opening a public hearing on House Bill 3416. Representative Bynum. Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 3416 directs the Department of Transportation to offer extended weekday hours and Saturday operating schedules at field offices. There is a dash one amendment in front of you that replaces the measure, directs the Department of Transportation to study feasibility of the division of driver and motor vehicles field offices to provide services outside of normal business hours on weekdays and on Saturdays. The department will report the results of a study to an appropriate committee on interim committee of the Legislative Assembly no later than March 31st, 2018.
Representative Bynum, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janelle Bynum, and I represent House District 51, which serves the communities of East Portland, Damascus, Gresham, Boring, North Clackamas, and Happy Valley. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of 3416 today. As one of the sponsors of the bill, along with Senator Thompson, I'm happy to talk about a potential remedy to an issue most Oregonians have probably experienced at some point. So the genesis of this was that my daughter, Christine, started talking to her dad, about how difficult it was for her and her friends to get their permits. So she's 15, and they were trying to figure out how to make it to the DMV during the day. They attend school, and a lot of them also have activities, so they would go directly from school to the activity. So they were trying to figure that out. The students' school schedules, coupled with the lack of transportation options for many kids, make taking care of business at the DMV a real encumbrance. And so if high school students are facing these barriers, one can only imagine what a working family is having to do to juggle in order to comply with the state motor vehicle requirements. So for many working families, especially those on the margins, struggling just to meet the basics, earning their wages hourly, and one unplanned hardship away from disaster, a trip to the DMV during what we call business hours is somewhat of a burden. And I think we can all relate, since we're here most of the day, trying to get your driver's license renewed is a pretty difficult thing between 8 and 5. And so I anticipated a little bit of resistance to change. I think that our job as legislators and as public employees is to make the lives of fellow Oregonians a little bit easier. We serve the people, and I think we should never forget that. The DMV and other departments like it provide a service to our citizens, services that we require. So just as the DEQ deviates from the traditional 8-to-5 model to accommodate different schedules, it's closed on Monday with morning Saturday hours. My question is, shouldn't the DMV have similar hours, especially since we require so much of the business to be conducted in person? So to close, 3416 is pretty simple. The DMV would offer shifted, not extended hours during the week for customers who can't get to one of the field offices during current business hours. And after several conversations with staff, I believe we've reached a good compromise that will get all parties to a workable solution. So you'll see in the Dash 1 amendment, we've outlined a pilot program to determine if the shifted hours will have the intended effect. So part of it is, part of the struggle is, even if you move the hours, do people know about them? Are they the right hours to move them to? Will they be utilized, and will we spend more money than we save, or than the benefit is realized by the public? So the limited pilot is intended to take place in two DMV field offices and will function for data gathering purposes, so we can revisit this issue in a more knowledgeable manner next session. My goal is to try to involve a college business student class to help us with the analysis, to look at areas that are impacted significantly by working families. And so we'll do a lot of analysis to try to make sure that we're using state resources properly, but at the end of the day, that we're serving the people. So thank you very much for allowing me to testify this morning.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions? Yes.
Chair McEwen, just a quick question. We used to, in Clackamas, at the Clackamas Promenade, used to have what they called like a speedy DMV, and is maybe whoever works on this pilot project or the feasibility study consider maybe not a full-blown DMV office on weekends or after hours, but maybe something where you can come in quickly, do some of these minor things, maybe not, you know, the highly technical things, but something like that?
So thank you, Chair McEwen, Representative Meek, Vice Chair Meek. Right now, the department is undergoing, I think it's a 10-year project to move a lot of the procedures that don't require in-person face-to-face transactions online. So they are modernizing and updating that way. And so what they really want to do is make sure that the really hard, you know, verifiable types of transactions are done face-to-face. And they've also moved to some third-party driver test administration. So we see a 10-year project moving forward to make it easier and more accessible. So we'll bring that to them.
Thank you, Representative.
And Representative and Vice Chair Meek, I believe Mr. McClellan's here. If we have any questions for ODOT, if you would like to come forward, Tom, maybe there's some background that you could provide on, I think, an attempt to do this in a prior iteration.
So, Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the DMV Administrator with the Department of Transportation. We do have some background and experience with studying this particular issue. Most recently, that was done in 2014 at the request of this body. Task force was formed. We did a study over that period of time. The primary reason for the forming of the task force was concerns about the lack of Saturday office hours. The result of that study, which had three legislators on it, was that there are more important things to do at DMV before you get to extended hours. Number one would be to replace those old computer systems, as was just mentioned, and we are in the process of doing that. They said do credit and debit cards in your field offices. We've done that. As of last fall, all 60 of our offices accept credit and debit cards. They said, post your wait times, your current real-time wait times on your website. We've done that. That's available now for over half of our offices. We have real-time wait times for those offices. So a number of things they recommended to us that we've followed through on. But missing from that set of recommendations was extend your hours. And I think the basis for that was the feedback we did have from customer satisfaction surveys, some work we'd done with other states to see what they were doing as far as offering extended hours. One of the findings was we do a monthly customer satisfaction survey. We sample 400 people. Not all of them respond to the survey, but we get about a 30% response rate. About 400 people who go to our field offices and ask them, what was your experience like? And there are some the specific things we're asking them about, the way they were treated, how they felt about their wait time, those types of things. But sometimes the most revealing piece has to do with the unsolicited comments that we get as part of that process. We went back through 3 years of those monthly surveys, and we found very few comments about office hours. the lack of a Saturday or a lack of an evening opportunity. It was more around credit and debit cards, wait times. How come you have empty windows, counters that don't have employees sitting there waiting to help me? Which was another recommendation, actually, of the task force is hire some more people. Well, our budget doesn't allow for that. So there's a lot of just interesting information that we've gathered over the years, studies that we have done. And I think the most recent one is that task force that was formed of just outsiders looking at our organization, staffed by the Department of Administrative Services, not by our employees. And they came to some conclusions that, yes, that is one component of good customer service, the hours that you're open, but there's a lot of other things you need to consider as well. And so we've done studies. We did a pilot in November of 2010 through August of 2011. We did a pilot in the Portland metro area with five offices where we stayed open until 6 o'clock on Mondays and Fridays. We built it and no one came, basically. We had the highest I think we had was 3% of the people we served in those offices were served in that 5 to 6 p.m. time frame. And it should have been, if it was just equally spread, at least 10%, because it was a 10-hour office open period of time. Just did not get much interest in that. And that included people that were coming in before 5 o'clock that today we continue to serve. We may close the doors at 5 o'clock, but if you're in the lobby, we'll continue to serve you. And sometimes it goes until 6 o'clock until we can clear that lobby and people are served and we unlock the door and let them out the door. So we still are serving past 5 o'clock. And those numbers were in the analysis that we did. And that was a few years ago, 2010 to 2011. But a 9-month period where we tried it and just did not get much interest in it. So it doesn't mean it can't be studied again. And well, it's newer data and different times.
And Tom, that may be where we head with this. I really clearly understand Representative Bynum's desire to. We all want to serve our constituents well, and I think we do need to have an open ear and listen to those voices that are out there saying maybe we do need to take another look at this. Times do change. You've changed your system with debit and credit. I know the third party testing for drivers is something maybe needs to be advertised better so people understand it's there. Maybe we do need to take a look in metro area that there could be some sort of a change or an adjustment, as Vice Chair Meek mentioned, in some sort of an additional service. So what I would like to suggest is that we direct you to work with Representative Bynum in a collaborative way through this interim and see if there's a way that you could come up with some sort of what I see in this is a feasibility study, a study and a potential pilot that could try and address some of the issues that she has brought. Because we are a fluid system here. We do change. People's needs change. People's lifestyles change. You're changing. You have a long 10-year plan to improve what you're doing, which we all watch very carefully. But if you're amenable to that idea, Representative Bynum, if I would love to direct ODOT to work with the representative, see what we could come up with in the interim with some sort of a study to take a look at her concerns.
Chair McEwen, I would definitely follow through on that. That was your request to do some kind of a study, definitely working with the representative and others to analyze this. There's a lot of things are fluid, like you said.
Things are fluid.
It wasn't that long ago we started accepting the driver education certificates. For teens that finish that program, we accept that certificate of completion as equivalent to a drive test. So you don't have to take the test again under the pressure of a DMV office with a government official sitting next to you.
We
accept that.
Yeah.
So that's another improvement we've made just in the last few years. So things are constantly changing, and people have different needs and expectations of government. So. And
Representative Bynum, one thing, I had a delightful conversation with your daughter, and I clearly heard from her that for her and for her companions, her friends at school, that this is something that they have a concern about. And student voices are not always heard at this level and not always heard, I'm sure, in a survey at ODOT.
Right.
And so I would like to just be assured that as you move forward looking at this issue, that students be included so that those voices can be heard as well. Because I think maybe what's missing here is that view of your consumers, who are new consumers,
who are coming into your field offices that are challenged, that we make sure that we're having some voice to what their concerns are as well.
Understood completely.
Okay. All right. Representative Bynum, are you okay with that path moving forward?
Yes, I appreciate the consideration. I did want to address one thing you said. We have made a lot of progress, and I wanted to thank you personally for that. I also want to make sure that we are doing things to make sure that things that we add to the system aren't viewed from a lens of wealth. And a lot of my community, they don't have a lot of money. And so, like, the driver test being given through the driving schools, when I looked into it, you had to pay $400 for the driving school. And so while it was a good improvement that you didn't have to go to the DMV, it also meant that if you didn't have $400 to send your kid to driving school, your kid didn't have the opportunity to take that test with the driving instructor. They still have to go to the DMV. So I always want to make sure that even if you don't have, that the offices of the state are open to you without restriction. So
I think that's certainly a valid point that I would hope that you would look at as you work together to study this issue as you move forward.
Just a quick question.
Yes, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair McKeon. Mm-hmm. Representative Bynum and Director McClellan.
Well, he called me McLean, so we're all over the board. It's all good.
I know. I was under the impression that there was some type of funding mechanism for folks in a kind of a Title I system for driver training, and that's not the case. Subsidized.
Chair McKeon, Vice Chair Meek, there is, through the driver education program, there's subsidies of that particular program. What she was talking about was more the training, other types of training, that maybe not through a driver education program, or that was, okay, driver ed. So there is some subsidizing. We currently have three businesses right now that do our drive test in addition to or separate from what the drive schools are offering. And I think last I heard it was more like $35 or $40 to actually do the test. They wouldn't have to go through the class, the training, to take the test. Many people choose to do that, but they don't have to do that. So, but it's too small. You know, three companies, six examiners is not nearly enough for a state our size. So we are actively looking to expand that through a procurement process and better mechanism in place to regulate that as well as we grow it. Our plan is to expand that and hopefully not result in $400 per student to take the test.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bynum, I couldn't agree with the underlying premise of this bill more. I simply do not know how working people can function and carry out necessary business with DMV outside of normal business hours. And because of that, I think we have created an unfunded burden, not a mandate, but a burden on employers, because if I have to get to the DMV personally, then I'm going to go to the boss and say, hey, boss, I need some time off. I got to go to the DMV. I can't drive into work tomorrow if I don't get the tags for my plates or whatever. So the boss relents and says, okay. Well, you've just created a situation now where that employer is going to have to let every single employee in their employment go to the DMV whenever they have to. And I just don't know how we can expect, A, employers to have to deal with this problem, and B, working people to be able to do it. So I am entirely sympathetic with this bill. My question, while Tom is here, how long has it been since the DMV was open on Saturdays, and what percentage of their business was conducted on Saturdays when we used to be open then?
Chair McKeon, Representative Witt, in 2009 we had 11 locations where we offered at least some Saturday service. Eugene, I think, was once a month for a few hours, so that was part of the 11. Over the period of September of 2009 through the summer of 2012, we consolidated a number of offices. There was a reference a minute ago to Clackamas Promenade, Lloyd Center. I can't remember. There were four of them that we ended up consolidating. They were more the express offices, very limited in what they could do. But for some people, for certain needs, worked quite well. But over the years, 20 years to be precise, the need for that had actually declined. We were offering our online vehicle registration renewals, which is one of our simpler transactions. People were accepting that, adopting that, instead of going to the office. So our volumes were declining in those locations. At the same time, much of the state and government was the same. We were eliminating positions. We were doing hiring freezes. We were doing span of control. We were eliminating management positions. It was a tough period of time. Sure. So we had fewer people, and we felt like we'd watered down the soup, that we were spreading our people too thin. And the net effect in our primary performance measure is wait times. And so if we're spread thin, like morning when you first open, which tends to be one of our heavier times, if you're spreading those people out so that they're there in the evening, you end up with a wait time that is hard to recover from the rest of the day. So it was more of a, you know, management consolidation, let's streamline, let's standardize so that people know from community to community what the typical hours are for a DMV. So they just know it's a Monday through Friday operation, I've got a plan for it. So it was a decision during a period of time, but we gradually, and through a lot of reach out to local legislators and local officials, before we did any of those changes, we reached out to them to let them know what we were planning to do and why, and accepted their input on it. So there was a pretty good, from a public, you know, process as well that went into that those decisions.
Madam Chair,
Representative Witt,
I think it was the right decision for the time, and I agree with you that times do change, and I'm not sure, but what, you know, since we're not in the trough of the Great Recession anymore, that maybe we ought to rethink this thing. But I also want to say, when I went to the DMV over here at Lancaster when you came in on the original bill, I just want to reiterate. The level of service there is lightning fast. I could not believe how fast it actually is. So.
Thank you.
And Tom, that begs a question for me. I know in the past years that I've been here, there's been talk, there's always a movement towards more online services being provided. Mm-hmm. Is that part of your game plan moving forward too, that more, I know you can't do a driver's test online, you can't take a student permit test online, it has to be done in person because you don't want people cheating, it has to be observed, I get that. But are there other things in your basket that are being moved that direction as well that can streamline this process too, or are you kind of at the end of the road for what you can do online?
Chair McEwen, that's an excellent question. For the systems we have, computer systems we're working with, we're nearing the end of what we can do. But with the investment in new computer systems, we fully anticipate a lot more opportunities for online services, maybe more self-service capabilities. We're doing some research into kiosks. A number of states have adopted that as a way to more of a self-service, like a checkout, like you'd see at a grocery store today. Come in and take care of your business, do it all by yourself with touch screens and things like that. Nevada in particular is really invested in that. So that potentially, it's not in scope necessarily for our service transformation program, but we definitely want to be able to get to the point where our systems are adaptable enough that we can deliver our services in different ways. And we have a pretty long list of things we want to add to what we have today that you can do online.
And I'm sure you'll be back to talk to us about that at
some
point.
I will be.
But I don't want to lose sight of the fact that Representative Bynum brought something, that the student aspect of this. Mm-hmm. Once again, I think those voices are very important, and we don't always tend to have them in the mix of the conversations we have here. And I think it's just a really important thing to take note of, that they are your consumers as well, and this is an issue for them. So, and thank you,
excellent
Representative
point.
Witt, for your comment. Representative Wilson.
Yes, before you go, I just wanted to say I can never relate to those jokes about the DMV, because I don't find that to be the case in Grants Pass. And when we're up here, we tend to use the Dallas facility. And always just really, really good. So
great.
Just
Thank you. Yes, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The voter registration that was just started in the last biennium, can that be done online right now? And I would assume that would be done in the future online.
Chair McEwen, Representative Barreto, there is online voter registration that's been around even longer than what we did last year. What we have in place today is a new, really, motor voter approach. So instead of us asking each person when they apply for a driver's license or an ID card if they want to register to vote, it's assumed that you will, and they'll receive information through the mail to complete that process. So it's streamlined in that sense, that we're not taking the time to ask the question, collect the forms, and sending them on to the county registrar. So it's a pretty smooth process. Other states have gone maybe even a little further with a little more automation of online type capabilities, but we have it there.
Yeah, follow. Yes, I was thinking you could vote, or you could register online prior to motor voter,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily with the DMV. That's a new thing.
And Representative Barreto, what they do is they get the information from the voter registration. And they do some checks against our database, the name and customer number, driver license number. They ultimately get the signature from our records too to complete that process. So that avoids the wet ink, process for signing a registration form. So we've had a real good partnership with the Secretary of State's office for that.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Representative Byam, thank you so much for bringing this to us. We'll look forward to you and Mr. McClellan and Ms. Joyce coming forward with some recommendations. Great. Thank you. I'm going to open a work session on, I did not forget the Connect Oregon, everybody was panicking, 2288. Would you like to just come forward and give us a, Mr. Walker?
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, House Bill 2288 authorizes issuance of lottery bonds for the Connect Oregon program, declares an emergency effective upon passage. There is a revenue light that has been issued, which indicates that they'll do a further analysis when we figure out exactly how much will go to the Connect Oregon program. And there is a likewise a fiscal that's indeterminate because there are blank places in the measure. It has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
This is once again a bill that has a direct nexus with the transportation package that we are building. Ms. Bohart, if you want to, I don't know if we have any questions, just in case anybody does. I think most you are all aware Connect Oregon will be in its seventh iteration in this session. It will be Connect Oregon number 7. This is a well-established, mature program that deals with multimodal infrastructure that cannot be supported by the Highway Trust Fund. It's been very successful. It's been a national model for other states. It's a rather unique project. But again, in the transportation package, I chaired the multimodal work group. We will be bringing a proposal that makes some appropriate changes to Connect Oregon. It changes the funding structure of Connect Oregon. But once again, as with Safe Routes to Schools, it's appropriate to send this down to Ways and Means to sit until the culmination of the transportation package is determined. So I would ask that we just send this down to Ways and Means and let it sit until we figure out what the whole program looks like. I don't know if you have any comments.
For the record, Jerry Bohart, TV Division Administrator with ODOT. No other than it was identified in the governor's budget at a little over $71 million. So for all five of the non-highway modes.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, just a question for you since you have a lot more experience than I do in this area. I am fine with Connect Oregon, but I'm a bit concerned about the usage of lottery-backed bonds to pay this off. What is our history, and what potential concerns could one have with funding of that nature?
Representative Wilson, you are singing to the choir. As we moved our multimodal work group forward since the beginning of the session until a week or two ago, we worked very hard to try and address the concerns that I have about the lottery dollar nexus with Connect Oregon. I think for the last six sessions, and Jerry, you can I'm not going to get this exactly right. The original program had a budget of $100 million. It was $100 million for three
correct
sessions. Then it went down to
40, 42, 45.
Yes. The governor's budget proposes it back at 71. My concern with the reliance on lottery are twofold. The referenda that passed in the last session are targeting lottery, and they were very successful. And I fear that now our electorate will see that as an opportunity to fund what I would call pet projects, and there will be more of those. And the success of those chips away at lottery dollars availability for Connect and other things. Connect Oregon was designed for economic development, and I see that eroding. I also see a casino opening up just north of Vancouver that I think is going to have an impact on our lottery revenue. I just don't think that we can bank on lottery revenue to support Connect into the future. So in the transportation package, there are going to be two or three different alternative sources of revenue looked at to fund Connect in a different way. If we are successful in doing that, we can move Connect away from lottery, which I believe is going to be challenged in the future. So I appreciate you raising the issue.
Yeah, thanks for.
But we still, this bill, I think, still just needs to go down to Ways and Means and sit as a backup plan in case we need it in the future, just in case we're not successful with the package. So any other questions for Ms. Bohard?
So,
yes, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are you sending this down with no recommendation?
I think we need to send it with a do pass recommendation. Yeah, I would suggest that we do that, just as we have done the last six sessions. I don't really see any need to change that, but contingent upon the package being successful.
But as you point out, I mean, there's a blank or two in there as far as exactly how much, correct?
Yes, correct. Please.
Representative McEwen.
So, I mean, it's without a number.
Members of the committee, there are blanks in there. I believe in the governor's budget that they've identified $71 million.
Okay.
And what that'll come down to is the negotiations towards the end of session, if we move that, about how much we'll go
the co-chairs in Ways and Means once they do their magic at the end of the session. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I mean, I struggle with the I think what you just said, and what I think the opposition to this bill was, and that was the cannibalization of this lottery funds. And so I'm going to be a no vote on it, but I'm concerned with the overall spending and management in the state right now, because you know right now we have as far as per capita spending, I think we're number six in the nation, and if we don't start whittling that down and start bending down the cost curve and start taking some of these things a little more to heart, I think we're just going to continue down that road. So at some point I feel like we just need to say no.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Representative Witt.
Madam Chair, maybe we could create a 50-50 pool. And we could have kind of a pool to determine who picks the right day when we have a revenue package, and the proceeds for which could go to Connect Oregon. Just a thought.
Just a very good thought. Noted, sir. No comments. Do we have Vice Chair Vile?
Yes. Are you going to close the? Oh, we're in a work session. Sorry.
We are just in a work session.
All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2288 to the floor with a do pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Vile moves House Bill 2288 to the floor with a do pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any more discussion?
Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Vile.
I'm just going to add my voice to those that have commented on the fiscal implications of this. And just like the House Bill 3230 and 2290 that we talked about earlier today, both of those having significant tax and fiscal implications, I'm concerned. But I'm going to be supporting this for the reason that I do believe it continues a program that appears to have been successful. And I'm very hopeful that the process in Ways and Means will sort this all out.
Thank you. All right, seeing none, let's see, where are we? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Barreto?
No.
Representative Evans?
Courtesy yes, given the blank nature, but a courtesy yes.
Thank you.
Representative
McClain? Aye.
Representative Noble?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Witt?
Courtesy yes to send it on to the decision makers.
Vice Chair Meek?
Aye.
Vice Chair Vile?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion passes. This will go down to Ways and Means to lie in repose for a period of time, I am sure, along with many other things. Let's see. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 2288. Mr. Walker, have I missed anything, or have we exhausted our agenda for today?
Representative McKeown, members of the committee, I believe we are done.
Pardon me? 2464 is not being moved today.
Okay. But we have to send it down.
I'm going to turn to Mr. Walker. This finishes our we've reached the halfway point, everybody. The House bills are done. We have Senate bills beginning to come our way. Since we were able to complete today, we will not be meeting on Friday, so you can take that off your calendar. We will be meeting next Wednesday, and my vice chairs and Mr. Walker and I need to sit down now and look through our Senate bills. We haven't had a chance to do that yet. So as far as Wednesday goes, Mr. Walker.
Chair McKeown, members of the committee, the agenda for the Wednesday meeting is still in flux. We have roughly 8 Senate bills, and we will take a look at those and decide what we're going to hear and what we're going to move.
All right, sir. So that stay tuned for Wednesday. We'll have an agenda posted as soon as we have a chance to work through our Senate bills that are beginning to come over. I understand that Senator Beyer had a very robust first half of the session, and we will have a number of Senate bills coming. So we'll look forward to hearing those when the time comes. And on that note, congratulations. We made it halfway, and we are adjourned.